Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Tim Deputy, Brandon Brooks, Hector Bones, and so many new patrons this weekend. John Lucas, Maul, Hong Yi, Neil, and Open Bayou is back. Welcome back, everybody. Good to have you. On this episode of DTNS, why TikTok is about to get banned and how ByteDance is going to fight it. Why Embracer Group will split into three like the shards of Narsil. And you like canceling streaming services, and the New York Times is on it. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, April 22nd, 2024. In Los Angeles, I'm Tom Merritt.
Even the heart of Texas, I'm Justin Robert Young.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Cheney.
Roger, I see that you tried to make me say in the Los Angeles studio to prevent me from making it sound like I'm only Tom Merritt when I'm in Los Angeles, and I appreciate it.
I try, but I you know, you can bring a Tom to the script, but you can't get
the one time I didn't Ron Burgundy myself, I should have. All right, let's start with the quick hits. You know, there was that story going around of ChatGPT using TaskRabbit, or maybe it was GPT-4 to use TaskRabbit to order something done for them. Four University of Illinois scientists, go Illini, have found that feeding computer vulnerabilities and exposure listings, those CVE listings, critical vulnerability listings, into GPT-4 can lead to a way to make the model automatically exploit the vulnerability. So they crafted a prompt that used the CVE and were able to get the code and have the model exploit the vulnerability. At OpenAI's request, the scientists did not release the exact text of the prompts they used. If it makes you feel any better, only GPT-4 could pull it off. They looked at a lot of models. Every other model they looked at failed, though GPT-4 did have an 87% success rate. They also did not test on Claude 3 or Google's Gemini 1.5.
Tinder has added a share my date feature that lets you send details about an upcoming date to friends and family. It includes the name of the person that you're seeing, as well as dates, time, and location. You can also add a note. People you share it with can see the details even without a Tinder account, but Tinder users can see the profile of the person that they're meeting. The link expires shortly after the date.
Yeah, it takes place of those screenshots people have been using. Meta is licensing its Meta Horizon OS to other companies to use on their own headsets. Virtual reality, augmented reality, mixed reality, all of those. That operating system was previously known as the Meta Quest platform. The Meta Horizon OS itself is an open source version of Android, so you wouldn't need a license to use it except for the, you know, open source license. But Meta has several proprietary elements not included in the open source version, so they are giving that to people as well. Meta announced that Asus and Lenovo are building products using the Horizon OS, and Microsoft will partner on an Xbox-branded limited edition version of the Quest.
Microsoft has added the ability to download Windows apps from the web version of their store without having to launch the Windows Store first. Apps downloaded through the browser, like installs from non-store app websites. The apps still have the features and protections you get through the Windows Store, just without needing to launch the whole store app.
Isn't that nifty? fewer clicks. Rest of World has a story about seven companies in Nigeria, South Africa, and Kenya who switched from Google to Indian-based Zoho for productivity services. So stopped using Google Workplace, started using Zoho. Users in Nigeria grew 50% for Zoho in 2023. Revenue for Zoho in South Africa grew 73%. One of the differentiators is that Zoho lets you pay in your local currency, and they charge five times less than Google or Microsoft, at least in Africa, who do not take your local currency. Zoho has been around since 1996. If you're like, wait, I think I've heard of them, but it began its local operations in Africa in 2019. Do you know the Embracer Group? Justin?
I do. I've heard their name more recently, especially over the last year and a half.
Yeah. They've gotten a lot of attention. There's a lot of backstory to this. They're a Swedish company, probably most famous for having top tier intellectual property like Tomb Raider, Lord of the Rings. They have a license to a lot of the Lord of the Rings stuff. They also, like many game companies, have been hitting the hard times recently. In fact, they made the news not too long ago for selling Borderlands developer Gearbox to Take-Two Interactive for less than Embracer Group paid to acquire it 3 years ago. So it probably isn't a shocker that the company announced some more drastic actions Monday. It's going to split into three companies. Just hammer that thing apart. Mm-hmm. Asmodee Group will take the tabletop gaming business. So Ticket to Ride, Exploding Kittens, Catan, big names in the tabletop space, but something that maybe, you know, not everybody who wanted to buy a video game company would want to buy. So Asmodee Group will spin off within the next year. Coffee Stain and Friends will be the name of the second company. They'll get all the indie mid-market free-to-play games. So Goat Simulator and Valheim are included there. That's expected to spin out sometime next year. And then the remaining company will be renamed Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends. because, of course, it'll have the Lord of the Rings IP, but also the AAA titles like Tomb Raider, etc. Justin, it's another example of the shakeout rippling through the gaming industry. Is there anything different about this one in your estimation?
Tom, I am not an expert businessman. I'm just a barking dog on the internet. But it does appear that these guys did a whoopsie, as it's referred to in business, and spent more money than they have. The Gearbox move seemed like a panic bailout. This seems like more than that, to be totally honest. It makes it seem like they are getting ready to sell parts of these out to other people, and I can think of buyers on a lot of these. I mean, there are retailers that would probably want the exclusive rights to things like Ticket to Ride and Exploding Kittens and Catan. I'm thinking of Target specifically, who make a decent money. They're a pretty big buyer of tabletop games. And as far as the Lord of the Rings franchise goes, if you look at the check that Jeff Bezos cut just for, you know, the study guide for Lord of the Rings, this is a big, big deal.
Yeah, and you could interpret this in a lot of ways, but none of them are, we're doing great and this will help us do better. It's all, well, we could liquidate the business, but how do you liquidate it? And the fact is, they probably were having a hard time finding somebody who wanted to take over Embracer Group as a whole, so they split it into swallowable chunks. Like you said, somebody like Target might be interested in the tabletop gaming business, but they wouldn't want the AAA title business. It's not what they do. And somebody might want the AAA titles, but not want to take on the riskier, lower margin business of the indies. So breaking it up into three parts like this does make sense. And it does signal that Embracer Group is done. I mean, they're obviously done because they're splitting into three groups, none of them named Embracer Group. But they're also, these are probably going to end up being parts of other companies, don't you think?
Absolutely. The bigger question is, where are we at in the world of IP hoarding? Right, because that is what Embracer wanted to do. That you have all of this very, very valuable intellectual property, and by parceling it out for whatever deals that you're going to do, the ones that are really performing can subsidize the ones that are not particularly performing. You can buy them and sell them like trading cards, but the thing I wonder about with them is, did they just get, and I'm going to use this term, although I don't mean it literally, too greedy by hoarding too many, and they weren't smart enough about the deals that they were making in the meantime? Or is this just an industry in a decline, these gigantic siloed warehouses of intellectual property?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like it is definitely an industry where the cracks show faster. This should be a company that's weathering the storm well, given its IP. The fact that it's not tells me that they weren't executing the appropriate strategy to maximize the benefits of this IP. And so somebody else is going to have to step in and do that.
And I guess at the end of the day, you're only really making money in this business if you've got a big competitive market for buyers and for projects. And one of the things that I'm sure probably really, really hurt them, especially in the world of the AAA games, where the big things that would move them forward would be television shows and movies, is the big strike that happened. All of a sudden, people are not buying things in the same way they were, and they probably couldn't survive 2 years of that.
Yeah. It's a confluence of events. But I go back to the fact that, you know, the company that has Lord of the Rings and Tomb Raider and Catan, they are the ones everyone says, well, if you've got the IP that has all the great sequels, then you're doing fine. It's the other folks that aren't. They even have successful indies like Goat Simulator. So I'm not sure why they hit on hard times as much as they did, but they did. And I'll be curious whether it's Netflix, Amazon, or Microsoft who buys Middle Earth Enterprises.
Ooh, yeah.
The New York Times has discovered something I know several of you already have as a habit, regularly canceling streaming services when you're done watching a show and subscribing to others in order to binge. The article really is built on a lot of data coming out of Antenna. Some of this data from Antenna, it came out a couple of weeks ago. We even talked about it not only here on DTNS, but on Cord Killers as well. Antenna estimates more than 25% of streaming subscribers have canceled three or more services over the last 2 years. So there's churn going on. One number that I hadn't seen is a third of people who cancel a streaming subscription resubscribe to that same subscription within the next 6 months. Antenna calls them serial churners and estimates they account for 40% of new subscriptions and cancellations. So this has become not something that you could do, but we're kind of hoping you don't because you forget that subscription is happening. It's not something that people say they do and don't. This is becoming common practice. And my first question, Justin, is what are companies going to do? How are they going to change their policies in order to try to minimize damage to their bottom line by this practice?
I don't know if they are going to get more protectionist because the things that you would do are hilariously unpopular, like locking people into longer term contracts. And that is just so against industry practice. So what I do think they're going to do is something that we have called for on this show. And you have certainly talked about a lot on Cord Killers. And that is that the industry is going to contract. You are going to begin to see some of these services sell to other services, because here's the problem. Not only did we have a gigantic burgeoning world of streaming services, each of which charged you monthly, but we're also out of the getting to know you prices phase. The very cute $3.99 subscription has now hit puberty and is at a gangly and unwieldy $11 to $12 every single month. And if that's the case, and that means that you got to ask yourself some hard questions. Do I really need to watch WrestleMania on Peacock? Or maybe I should just make sure that I'm watching whatever the buzzy new show is, like Shogun on Hulu. People are making a one show at a time decision. They have been for a while, but I think that this was inevitable considering the trajectory of the industry.
Yeah, I think the obvious thing you'll see is heavier promotion of upcoming stuff. Like, don't cancel us because this hot thing you're going to love is coming just in a couple of weeks. You're already seeing that. You're going to see that a lot more. I also think the bundling you're seeing is a hedge against this as well. So if you have bundled Hulu, ESPN, and Disney Plus, you're less likely to cancel Disney Plus because there's probably something on Hulu or ESPN to keep you. So you're seeing more bundles because of that. But I also think you're going to see a lot more longer subscription deals. Like Warner Brothers Discovery was doing this with Max. Sign up for a year and it's half the price as if you paid monthly. Again, way to lock you in for a year with the idea that, well, if you're not looking at this monthly, maybe you'll forget when it comes up for renewal a year because it only comes up once a year.
But is that worth it month by month for what their bottom line is going to be? Yes, they have the user, but is the user paying enough? Not to make everything about wrestling, because I already mentioned WrestleMania once, but there is a reason why Netflix made the big deal that they made for WWE's Monday Night Raw. That is live. That is 52 weeks a year.
Yeah, yeah.
It does not stop. It happens over and over and over and over again. So if you are interested in that, you are not going to cancel Netflix. That will be at the bottom of your list of places that you would ever cancel. The interesting thing here from a technical perspective is I'm kind of surprised that we, even in a janky way, don't have a service for which will automatically just cancel the thing that you're not watching. Like, even if it was just a essentially a log of shows, some letterboxed kind of version and Untapped or something like that for television shows, and you would just say, hey, here are all the things that I subscribe to. And then every, you know, month or so, it'd be like, hey, by the way, it's been 3 months since you've watched anything on Disney Plus. You want to just cancel it? You know, he's resubscribed to it.
Yeah. Rocket Money is the name of a company, name of a service that was called something else in the past, but it offers that ability to cancel automatically when it notices that you've had something on your subscription for a long time. It just would need to get your permission to have your viewing data to go that one step further and say, oh, well, we'll keep track of whether you're actually using it or not, and then suggest canceling it. I think there's a hill to get over on that, which is how do you make your money on that service? Because you don't want it to be ad supported, because you're on the one hand saying, let us watch your viewing habits for you. And on the other hand saying, but, you know, getting a bunch of people who are like, I don't want people watching my viewing habits. So it's kind of hard to thread that needle, I guess.
There's one player that could do it.
Yeah.
And that's Apple.
Oh, yeah. Because they're seeing everything you're watching on your phone. If you have an Apple TV, even better. Mm-hmm. Right.
And Apple already has the gatekeeper there. Now, it would salt the earth with almost everybody else in media, but it would probably be the biggest end of the Godfather cementing themselves as the unquestioned leader of all entertainment. If they just said, no, we are now here for the people. We will cancel. Come through us. We're going to take a cut not only from all these services, but we're going to cancel the services when you want to. Yeah. That's why you buy an Apple TV.
And they've got the on-device chops to be able to say, we'll never know what you're watching. Only your on-device AI will. And then to the media industry, oh, you thought you hated us when we stopped ad tracking. Wait, did you get a load of this? Speaking of Apple, if you are somebody who is tired of just the nonstop, like, oh, there's another rumor about an MX processor. What about actually using devices? What about people who, like normal people, just using Apple devices? Well, Sarah Lane and Eileen Rivera have a show just for you, and it comes out on Monday. So if you are hearing my voice before the afternoon on Monday, you can watch it live on the same channel as Daily Tech News Show. And of course, get it on demand whenever you want. It's called Apple Vision Show. You can find out all about it at applevisionshow.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
All right, here's the meat on the table. Saturday, the United States House of Representatives passed another bill that would require ByteDance to sell TikTok's U.S. arm within 9 to 12 months of being ordered to do so. Yes, they passed this bill before, but it was only 6 months. Now it's 9 months with presidential discretion to extend it to 12 months. If the company does not sell TikTok within that time, internet companies in the U.S. would be prohibited from distributing the TikTok app. Now, the bill also allows the president at their discretion and with some publication to apply this to other services on the internet that are from countries that are foreign adversaries. And that's pretty much China, Iran, Russia, and North Korea. But ByteDance and TikTok, at least in the original version of the bill, were named by name. Like, this bill is specifically about TikTok. Also, the bill is one of four that passed on Saturday, mostly pertaining to foreign aid. Each of the bills passed on Saturday, there was one for Ukraine, one for Israel, one for Taiwan. Those can be considered separately, so they could pass the other foreign aid bills without passing the one that has TikTok in it. But the Senate intends to consider them all at once. If it passes the Senate this week and is signed into law by the president, both of which are likely, ByteDance says it will challenge this on constitutional grounds. And it has won a case against banning TikTok in Montana on constitutional grounds. Interestingly, Bloomberg sources say that the former Microsoft lawyer Eric Anderson, who has been TikTok's general counsel in the U.S. since 2020, is expected to step down before any of those court cases are filed. However, Anderson just passed his four-year vesting date, and apparently that's the thing at TikTok. You can find records of tons of their executives hitting that vesting date and being like, see, I'm cashing out with my stock. And he has not worked on the U.S. government relations part of TikTok's business since January 2023. So I wouldn't read too much into it other than Eric Anderson committing to, like, I was going after my four-year mark, and I'm definitely going now. Going back to the actual passing of this bill, which hasn't happened yet, but we're expecting it. Let's talk about what changed. What changed between the first House bill, which got no momentum in the U.S. Senate, and my opinion was like, I don't think this is going anywhere, and this one, which appears to be ready to pass the Senate before the end of the week.
One thing on Anderson, he is apparently not a wartime consigliere.
No, to keep the Godfather. Good.
Yeah. What changed? We don't know.
We know what changed in the bill, but what changed in the attitudes, right? Like, yeah.
3 to 6 months. That's pretty much all that changed. I have said on this show and on PX3 that this has been very confounding. A lot of the normal elements of gravity, how we would assume that certain political actors would behave, have not made a whole lot of sense throughout all of this. And this is one of them that absolutely doesn't. Word kind of quietly leaked out last week that the chief opponent of the House bill that initially passed in the Senate, Senator Cantwell, that she was now for this bill that was coming out of the House with very, very little difference between the two of them in very, very congressional ways. The way that you kill a bill if you don't want to pass it is by saying, I want a bigger, more aggressive bill. And that's what Senator Cantwell was saying about the initial one. The way that you pass a bill is by making it very quiet or stapling it onto a bunch of other stuff that's far more controversial. That's how a lot of funding gets done. That's how a lot of different rules get passed. It's the reason why our friend Jen Briney has a great show, Congressional Dish, because she actually reads these bills and sees what comes through on them. And that's what's happening with this TikTok bill. I don't know what changed in terms of the attitude, because the House was always going to be the hardest road to walk. The Senate and the White House are theoretically aligned since they're both controlled by the same party. So I don't know. I don't know what changed, except to say, let's punt this. Let's be strong on this issue, but not so strong that we want to do it before the election.
Yeah, it's an interesting about face where it felt like point scoring for the House and the Senate would be the break to keep them from having to deal with the consequences. All the House people could say, yeah, we voted for this to the older voters that win some points, but without having to actually go through the ban, making it 9 months and up to 12 months certainly kicks the consequences down the road.
Yeah.
But it really has gone from like, I don't see the Senate ever voting on this to it's probably going to pass this week. Senator Rand Paul, the only one that I've heard say that they will try to stop it. And even Rand Paul said, like, I don't think I will. I think it's going to pass, but I'll at least try to drag it out. So there's no chance this doesn't pass, right?
Senate watchers will let you know that this is often what Rand Paul says.
Sure.
About things. Rand Paul is a serial, I'm going to try and stop it, but trust me, I understand that I'm going to get run over by this bus. No, it's passing. It's passing. There's no meaningful opposition to it in terms of where you would expect it to come from if it were not going to happen, and that's from the Democratic side. That's why Cantwell was a big voice before. And it's, again, it's going to be considered with a bunch of foreign aid that, at least in the Senate, has not been particularly controversial or really controversial in as it is in the House. So what was once thought of something extraordinarily aggressive is going to happen. This is leaving the hands of the legislative, and it will enter the realm of the courts.
Yeah, so that is how it could be stopped. We assume the Senate will pass it. The president has said if it passes, he'll sign it. But once it gets into law, ByteDance has made no bones about the fact that they will challenge it on constitutional grounds in court. And the constitutional grounds are TikTok LLC is a U.S. company. Even though it's owned by foreign ownership, it's a U.S. company, and it's got 170 million U.S. users. And to have legislation narrowly tailored, naming it by name, is a violation of First Amendment protections. It's Congress silencing a company that hasn't broken another law, because that's why you have to pass another law to silence it. And that was a good argument in the Montana case, as far as the courts were concerned. It does seem, from all of the experts I've reviewed, that they feel like it's probably going to be a good argument here. My guess is this would have to go to the Supreme Court, though.
It's national security, and it's a passed law. That's the other thing, is that the Supreme Court will often strike down things that is not adjudicated by the legislature. This has gone through those hurdles. So if it hits both of those things, I don't know enough to say whether or not this is going to get shot down.
Yeah.
Rob Khanna, who is a progressive Democrat, he was on ABC's This Week on Sunday saying that he doesn't believe that it will pass the legal justifications. And so he believes that there will be an injunction on this. I don't think that anything is going to happen immediately, But there are some interesting things that I should let people know. We're not going to get into the X's and O's of politics here, but since this is a tech story that will mix into the world of politics, let me just give you guys a glossary of terms and names that you should know. Number one, the Biden-Harris TikTok account. Now, it's a little odd that there's only one campaign that has a TikTok account, and it's the Biden-Harris campaign. They do not use phones that ban TikTok for the government use, but they are in the very weird position of now advertising their campaign to young voters and users of TikTok while actively trying to divest it and possibly ban it. On the other side, you've got Jeff Yass. He is an investor in TikTok and a big donor to Republican causes and specifically the Trump 2024 campaign. Trump today came out and said that young voters need to understand that it is Joe Biden who is banning this, and they should remember that when they go to the polls on November 5th. He is doing it so he can enrich Facebook. Know for that what you will. It is a very tangled and weird journey that we are on here, but it does, in my mind, feel inevitable that it will cross a legislative threshold this week.
Now, if ByteDance were to lose in court, they would have two options. Divest, sell TikTok. There's plenty of people lining up to try to make an offer to buy it. But ByteDance says it doesn't want to sell it. And the Chinese government has said it would oppose ByteDance selling it. They could stop it on domestic grounds there. If you didn't catch the know a little more about ByteDance and about TikTok, there is already a separate company called USDS that is not owned by ByteDance, which handles all the data for U.S. users. It handles the algorithm, although it doesn't get the source code for it, and it runs it on Oracle servers. So almost all of TikTok's data is already held by a separate company. I would say there's a very slim chance that you could have some escape clause where USDS becomes TikTok and it counts as selling, and maybe they get a little more than USDS already has and a contract. But the sticking point is going to be the source code of that algorithm. ByteDance is never going to allow that to go out. And that has been the demand, is that for this to be considered a divestment, the source code of that algorithm would have to go to whatever successor company there is. So as the sticking point as well.
And even if ByteDance was willing to sell the algorithm, they will not be allowed to sell the algorithm by way of the Chinese government.
Real quickly, the European Union also has its own formal investigation, its second formal investigation into TikTok over TikTok Lite. Not because TikTok Lite is an Instagram ripoff or something. It's because TikTok Lite rewards users with points for watching or liking videos that you can redeem into gift cards. And the commission is investigating if this impacts the mental health of young users. TikTok has until April 24th to argue against a proposal to suspend distribution of TikTok Lite in Europe while that investigation is underway. All right, real quick, let's check out the mailbag. On Friday, we brought up the article suggesting that maybe the word user shouldn't be used, at least in all cases anymore. Robert wrote in and said, I'm a manager of 30,000 plus M365, Microsoft 365 tenants. We call all of our accounts users. When we are trying to be polite outside of the tickets, we call them employees. Should I refer to them based on the app they are using? Emailer, Chatter, OneDriver, SharePointer? Nah. We have bigger fish to fry in this world. Robert, I would say that's a good argument for there are some situations where the depersonalization of user is a feature, not a bug. And I don't know. It may help get you through the day to think of them as users instead of people. But thank you for that feedback. Lots of interesting feedback from folks on the idea of, you know, when you should maybe not use the word user and use the word customer instead, like Stealth Dave is saying in the chat. Justin Robert Young, thank you so much for being with me today. What do you got going on that involves me being on your show?
Well, Tom, you're on my show this week. You will be on the Friday show. We're going to take a longer look at the conversation that we just had with TikTok, and hopefully we'll know a little bit more that's a different show we do together. But we will be more informed by the time that that interview airs about what is happening here, because I would say 90% of our offline communication has been mutually baffled at how quietly this phase of what is a gigantic story of the thing that the internet seems to care the most about, tech and politics, has intersected.
Indeed, indeed. Patrons, stick around for the extended show. Good day, internet. As Justin just mentioned, we didn't really talk about the journalism aspect of this. Well, we're going to fix that.
Finally.
By talking not only about how little TikTok has been covered, but also the reauthorization of FISA, the surveillance law that got signed on Saturday. You probably heard even less about that. We're going to talk about that. Stick around. You can also catch the show live Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We'll be back tomorrow. Talk to you then.
The DTNS family of podcasts, helping each other understand.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.